5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're going to dig this.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
Think we could listen to the radio or something?
Radio? Who needs a radio?
Featuring the biggest names and newsmakers from the world of sports media.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Now, here's your host, the president of Barrett Sports Media, Jason Barrett.
Back from the city of sin, where the only thing I didn't do was win. Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. I'm Jason Barrett, your voice of reason in this sea of sports media madness. This week, I'm back inside the friendly confines of BSM headquarters, and we've got a ton to discuss, most notably the recent cuts made at ESPN. That's coming up in just a moment. One thing I'm going to do differently on this episode is feature a roundtable conversation with two sports media reporters who I respect a lot. Brian Curtis of The Ringer and Mike McCarthy of The Sporting News will be here. Given the recent events of the past week at ESPN, it's a topic that requires a deeper dive, and so Mike, Brian, and I will explore the worldwide leader's present state of affairs on this episode. On an unrelated note, my thanks to Mad Dog Radio, SB Nation Radio, The Franchise in Oklahoma, The Ticket in Boise, and Sports Talk with Bo Mattingly for having me on their programs last week. If you'd like to arrange a future interview with yours truly, my contact information is available on sportsradiopd.com. As I increase my appearances on radio stations across the country, I've been thinking, what would the slogan of my media campaign be? You know, the easy choices are, make sports radio great again, like that hasn't been done already. The BSM World Tour, that would probably apply. I think the more appropriate title, though, would be killing quarter hours one station at a time. So consider yourselves warned when reaching out. From one plea to the next, this podcast is produced independently. I rely on your retweets, shares, and reviews to help spread the word. If you can take 15 to 20 seconds along the way to leave a few positive sentences about the episode on iTunes, it really helps out a great deal. So thanks, guys, in advance. Now that we've tackled those issues, let's sink our teeth into the juiciest story of the week. The ESPN layoffs are the focus of this week's Starting Point.
Quiet on the set. Can we please have quiet on the set?
Action!
If ever there was a time to roll out the Muse music and head into Panic Station, this would be that week. It was rumored, expected, and then it happened. Last week, ESPN entered the operating room, approached the machine, and pulled the plug, halting the careers of an estimated 100 sports media professionals. Many of these people have done exceptional work and been a part of your daily or weekly reading, viewing, or listening for a significant period of time. Now, when a bloodbath of this magnitude occurs, it's often met with the immediate public outcry. Industry people are going to question whether or not they're in the right business, and after the names trickle out, the finger-pointing begins. Many start wondering aloud why certain individuals got to stay while others were shown the door. And as frustration and rage boil up inside each person's soul, it soon leads to verbal assaults and personal attacks. Unless you're inside the management circle at ESPN, you're not going to understand the network's process for determining who remains and who exits. John Skipper and his team clearly have a different value for each person working as a public figure at ESPN, and nothing you say or do is going to compromise their beliefs. Among the factors to consider are, how much do they make? How do they rate on the network's programming or digital platforms? How are they viewed by the audience and advertisers? And also, how versatile are they? In some cases, folks like Ed Werder, Jason Stark, Andy Katz, Chad Ford, and Mark Stein were seen as specialists. Although they were very productive in their respective fields, they weren't considered by the network to be irreplaceable. Whether that proves to be true or not remains to be seen. But in sizing up last week's moves, it's impossible to not walk away with the impression that ESPN places a higher premium on hosts, personalities, and versatility, and less on reporting and writing. Now, when drastic changes like this take place, many questions are asked, and tons are quick to offer their assessment, so let me be the latest to dip my toe into those waters. As I see it, These moves are related to three key issues, and let me quickly say, political influence is not one of them. The first would be bad deals. In 2014, ESPN signed a 9-year, $24 billion deal with the NBA. In 2011, they extended their agreement with the NFL through 2021. That deal pays a reported $1.9 billion per season. In 2012, they struck an 8-year, $5.6 billion deal with Major League Baseball. Now, I know that's a lot of numbers, but when you add it all up, ESPN is on the hook each year for more than $5 billion. That doesn't include any employee salaries, other play-by-play and business relationships, facility costs, and the countless other financial challenges that come with running a major sports media company. Now, to be fair, what would we have said if ESPN dropped one of those leagues? The public headlines would be much worse, and a competitor would probably be a lot closer to disrupting ESPN's empire. Former ESPN executive John Wildhack, who was part of the negotiating committee and now serves as the athletic director for Syracuse University, recently told Brent Axe of ESPN Syracuse that the company made deals which he believes will be proven to be smart in the long run. Take a listen.
When it comes to NFL or NBA, I mean, this is must-see content. And when you have the opportunity to lock up that content long-term, I mean, to keep your competitors, you know, on the outside looking in, I think those were prudent deals. You know, we were in a position at ESPN where we had to make choices and determinations. And I think in the long run, the choices that were made will be proven to be the right choices.
When these deals were signed, cord-cutting hadn't yet become the in thing to do. Most pundits felt ESPN got fleeced on the NFL deal because not only did they pay double what other networks did, they also didn't receive a Super Bowl or as compelling of a play-by-play schedule. When you add last year's dip in the ratings, it's safe to say that for all of the NFL's benefits, it could still do a lot more to help ESPN succeed. The second issue revolves around changes in media consumption. With millions of people cutting the cord on television, adjusting to the changing climate is critical for ESPN. Now, TV isn't dead or on the verge of extinction, but neither was the print business when the internet was born. I admit it's hard for me to imagine a world without television, so I remain optimistic that it'll continue to be a strong part of our future, but the reality of the situation is that when one person drops cable or satellite, $7 a month vanishes from ESPN's pockets. Even if they earn back some of that income from digital platforms, they're faced with an immediate loss. Here, do the math. 13 million subscribers at $7 a month equals over $90 million a month. Now add that up over 12 months, and what do you have? Another $1 billion out the door. That's why ESPN is not only focused on being a multi-platform company, but they also want people who can excel across those various outlets. Say what you want about guys like Stephen A. Smith, but he has the skill to make an impact on radio, television, and print, plus he's an asset as a guest, speaker, and endorser. Listen to this quote that ESPN president John Skipper offered last week. He said, "Dynamic change demands an increased focus on versatility and value, and as a result, we have been engaged in the challenging process of determining the talent, anchors, analysts, reporters, writers, and those who handle play-by-play, necessary to meet those demands." You want to know why people like Stephen A. are highly valued at ESPN? There's your answer. Now, that doesn't mean every person the network hires in the future will possess those multi-platform skills, but you can bet that if future cuts are necessary, those who are uniquely skilled to contribute across multiple content channels will be in much stronger shape to survive than those who aren't. The final part of this conversation has to do with restoring the confidence of the company's stockholders. Here are some sobering statistics. ESPN has its lowest subscriber base since 2005. They've lost 13 million people during the past 3 years. The Walt Disney Company's cable division had operating incomes decline by $110 million year to year. And if you go back as far as 3 years ago, they're off by a third. Currently, they take in $864 million as compared to $1.26 billion in 2014. Those declines have reduced the confidence in stockholders and resulted in analysts speculating whether Disney should look to sell its once thought to be unflappable golden goose, ESPN. When profits shrink, you offset them by reducing expenses. The loss of 75 to 100 on-air people isn't going to put the company into an economic position which shields them from the pain of losing millions of subscribers. But it sends a message to those investing in the company that ESPN is committed to trimming the fat and being set up for future growth. Now, let's be clear. ESPN is still making money. This is not a company facing foreclosure. But desperate times do call for desperate measures. And with technology changing, the trust of stockholders, the media, and the public wavering, and long-term play-by-play deals limiting their economic viability, a new path is necessary. Let's just hope for the sake of the sports media industry, they choose the right one. I welcome your thoughts on ESPN's future. You could reach me by email at jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com or on Twitter @sportsradiopd. I want to continue this conversation by going a few layers deeper. And to do that, I've called upon two fellow sports media members, Brian Curtis of The Ringer and Mike McCarthy of The Sporting News. Each of these guys do a great job covering the sports media industry and are well-versed in the various issues facing ESPN. If you're not following them on Twitter or reading their work on their respective websites, I encourage you to do so. But that can wait for now, because first, you've got a conversation to listen to.
And now, our feature presentation.
Guys, let's start with this. Many blame it on cord cutting, some on rising play-by-play rights, politics, and needing to restore the confidence of Wall Street. All those things taken into consideration. Mike, I'll start with you. What do you believe was the number one reason why an estimated 100 people were let go last week at ESPN?
The number one reason to me is they overpaid for sports rights. Their Monday Night Football deal is atrocious. They pay double what everybody else pays, and they get the worst selection of games. I don't know why they paid so much. I mean, maybe they fought, but they had to have these live rights. But it certainly seems over the last couple of years that ESPN has been negotiating against itself in some ways. So I think the number one reason is they overpaid for sports rights.
Brian, what about you?
I'm going to boringly agree with Mike, and I'd say that cord cutting is probably number two on the list, and I'd say all the other stuff is way, 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 way down, even if it's on the list at all, basically.
A lot of these names that were let go last week are guys who've been there over a decade, some very high-profile names. Brian, from your standpoint, which one surprised you the most?
I think it was actually Ethan Strauss, the basketball writer, because you know, we were told that this was going to be a layoff that would concentrate, I think, a lot, have a lot of TV names in it. And, you know, when we think of layoffs, we think of, okay, the company is gearing toward the future. Where here's a guy who's a digital writer, who is writing a ton, who is covering one of the most popular sports teams, if not the most popular sports team on the planet. And who is also, by the way, I assume this is the case, much cheaper than some of the big TV names.
Yeah. So when
he was the one, I think, that stunned me most of all.
What about from your standpoint, Mike? Any that jumped out to you?
Jason, it would be a tie for me, Ed Werder and Jason Starks, because both of these journalists were people I respected. I've watched, I've listened, I've read their work for years. They were the epitome of insiders. And I think they stick out to me because they indicate where ESPN is going. Not a single one of the quote-unquote personalities or opinionists, the people who polarized viewers, lost their jobs. It was the reporters and anchors who did their job hard. And to me, that shows me where ESPN is going. There's going to be less emphasis on news and highlights, more personality.
Well, speaking of personalities, Colin Cowherd's a pretty popular one, left the network about 2 years ago to go to Fox Sports 1. He was on a Cleveland sports radio station last week, and he said, "This is only the beginning. We should expect annual layoffs at the worldwide leader." Now, Mike, is he right?
I think Colin Cowherd is right. I thought that was a very interesting interview where he basically blamed poor decision-making and overspending on sports rights for the current problems. I don't think we've seen the end of the layoffs this year. I think there's going to be more people going to be laid off. I think we're way past the point where it's a trim here and a nudge here. We're looking at the kind of layoffs that have buffeted the newspaper industry, as Brian wrote so well in his column about this. What was happening with the news industry, the newspaper industry and magazines over the last 20 years is going to start to happen at ESPN, where these kinds of layoffs become fact of life.
Brian, along those lines, I mean, can we see ESPN laying off people like this every year?
I don't know if we know enough about the economics, or I don't know enough about the economics to say with any certainty that it's a yearly thing. Are we not finished, you know, over the next couple of years? I'm sure you'd probably safely say, yeah. By the way, on Coward's statement, I thought that was, his statement was really striking because of all the people at FS1 who commented on this, and there were a bunch of them. His, to me, stuck out for being pretty compassionate and pretty level-headed.
Yep.
And as someone, you know, and someone looking at this with maybe an eye toward his former colleagues, and, you know, he had some criticisms, as you said, of ESPN's decision-making, but it was, I thought that statement was really striking in the sense that it really was, it made a lot of sense, and it was not, to me, driven by somebody who's at a competing network and is trying to score points off other people's misery.
You know, one story, or one topic, I should say, that you guys have both touched on at numerous points on the Sporting News and the Ringer that has come up time and time again with ESPN, yet there's still no concrete evidence on it, is how damaged ESPN is by the perception of being a left-leaning network with a heavy focus on a diverse presentation. When you consider all that took place last week and where this company has been over the last 2 years, how much do you feel that even matters in the grand scheme of these conversations, Brian?
I think it matters very, very little to what happened last week. I believe it's a real thing, this perception that ESPN is a liberal network. I always know this because I subscribe to a bunch of University of Texas football message boards, which is how I get out of my elitist coastal bubble. And the thing that comes up there about ESPN more than anything is whether it's a liberal, quote-unquote, liberal network or not. So I believe that that's a real perception in the world. How much of that is driven by people, again, some of whom work at Fox, constantly standing up and saying that, and again scoring points off that fact, I don't know. I believe it's a real thing. I don't believe it led to any of the layoffs last week. I mean, if you want to argue that ESPN has this perception that's out in the world that they may have to deal with at some point or embrace, as I think they mostly have so far, I would happily concede that. I just don't think it got anybody laid off.
Mike, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I would differ with Brian. I tend to agree with Linda Cohn, which is, I think this is a problem, and you're blind if you don't see it. I mean, I'm not saying that there's a secret May Day rally going on in the basement of ESPN where all the commies are getting together, but they have become a political football and a punching bag for the conservative right. All you have to do is take a look at, you know, the bright parts of the world. They just hammer home this message every day that ESPN is the enemy. ESPN is like CNN. ESPN is like MSNBC. And I think it is taking a toll.
You guys both started with this early on when I asked about the number one reason, and we talked about play-by-play rights. And there's no doubt that ESPN's on the hook annually right now for over $5 billion between the NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball. Former ESPN executive John Wildhack was on a Syracuse radio station, ESPN Syracuse, last week, told a guy, Brent Axe, who hosts a show, that he felt the company made the right call locking up their play-by-play rights long-term, and he made the point that the company let go of NASCAR at that time, and he felt that over the course of time, these deals would be proven to be prudent. Each of you guys talked to industry folks. How much of that confidence is still shared by those who you talk to? Mike, I'll start with you.
That confidence has seriously been shaken. You know, for decades, ESPN had the perfect business model with the dual revenue streams. But that was contingent upon that it would keep getting bigger and bigger. And at one point, distribution had almost reached that of a broadcast network. Well, now they're south of 88 million. Their right fees are fixed costs that aren't going anywhere, and they're getting less and less money from subscribers. I don't know what their ad sales situation is, but if ratings go down, then the ad sales are going to go down. So I don't think anybody has that kind of confidence anymore in these deals that Wildhack expressed.
Brian, you talk to high-profile people as well. I mean, how confident are they that these deals are still good deals?
Well, while the price tag is gigantic and probably way too high, you know, we heard a couple of years ago that the only reason anybody's going to watch ESPN or even television anymore is to watch live programming, right? To watch live sporting events. So if there's a scenario where you don't have these things versus you do, and at least you have football and NBA and some MLB to put on the air, it's a really hard decision, right? I mean, if we both agree that we can't go back in a time machine and do those deals over again at a lower number, I'm not sure what they're supposed to do. Because what are we going to watch? You know, are we just going to go in for the debate shows and the kind of branded sports centers and stuff like that? And it has to have live sports. Or, again, as we litigated a few years ago, why are we going to watch it all?
That's the interesting dilemma, right? Because if they lost any of these deals, we'd be killing them over the last 5 years for letting go of one of these big three professional sports leagues. On the other hand, the way the world's changed, now they're on the hook for astronomical rates to these leagues. And when you look at the NFL ratings that went down last year, I mean, Brian, from your standpoint, have we seen the football bubble burst at this point, or do you believe that they rebound?
I think they probably rebound if we see what we've seen in the last couple of years, which is that kind of crazy, unchecked growth that seemed to defy everything else on television. I would expect they're going to rebound a little bit this year. And again, you know, it's funny because when we had the ESPN layoffs last week, we had all these people dive in with whatever their favorite, whatever they hated about ESPN was the reason the layoffs had happened, right? It reminded me, I think, last year when the NFL ratings sank, right? And all of us who are worried about concussions said, see, it's the concussions that are causing, and all the people worried about Colin Kaepernick said, see, it's Colin Kaepernick. It's what finally this liberal league is being, you know, is getting its comeuppance. And actually, I thought there was a pretty strong parallel between the two.
I mean, Mike, do you think the NFL bubble's burst?
I don't think it's burst. I think NFL will rebound this year. I really do. I mean, the thing to remember about both the NFL and ESPN is, you know, this is a bad news cycle and we're all going over their mistakes, but they're two incredibly powerful entities with, you know, great talent bases. I mean, their competitors would love to have their problem. You know, so I expect ESPN to come out of this and adjust. They always have, just like I expect the NFL to come out of this and adjust. I mean, you saw the fervor around the draft. 100,000 people show up in Philadelphia, ratings up. I mean, that just shows you right there the power of the NFL.
No question. We're speaking with Brian Curtis of The Ringer, Mike McCarthy of The Sporting News regarding the state of ESPN. Guys, I want to shift the conversation to John Skipper because he's been the president and co-chairman of the company since January 2012. And if you look at the last 5 years, I mean, this guy's had to deal with some very difficult circumstances. He's made some unpopular decisions. Some of those were unavoidable. Some he chose to make. If his tenure ends tomorrow, what's his ESPN legacy? Mike, I'll start with you.
I would say his legacy would be very good. I mean, obviously, he's had huge challenges that Bodenheimer didn't have. I mean, Bodenheimer rode the wave of success when ESPN was very avant-garde and cool and nothing but growth. And Skipper, of course, now the buck stops with him. When the bundles are falling apart and people are cord-cutting, he has to deal with all these problems. So I think his legacy would be very good. He's, you know, he's had a strong commitment to diversity and to putting, you know, more women and more color on the air, and I think that's great. More folks of color, I mean, and his legacy is going to be good. But I mean, it's going to be really written over the next 2 or 3 years, Jason. That's when a lot of these big rights deals are going to come due again. We'll see if they keep baseball. We'll see if they keep these other leagues. There's still a long way to go.
You know, if they lose the NFL down the road, we'd have a different narrative on them, obviously. Brian, what about from your standpoint? If John Skipper walked out the door tomorrow, what do you consider his ESPN legacy to be?
I would seize on the last thing Mike said, which is I think we need a couple of years to figure it out. I think his point is absolutely right that, you know, it's very hard to compare Bodenheimer and Skipper because of just the absolutely different economic climates that they're in. You know, it's like those graphics we saw the other day when it said what was Obama's unemployment rate at the beginning of his term versus Trump? You know, not quite an apples-to-apples comparison, right? It's really hard to do this with blood on the walls a couple of days after all these layoffs happen. And what ESPN would tell you is that, look, we made some really awful, hard decisions to help right the ship so that this place looks a lot better and a lot more modern and a lot more sort of ready to take on, you know, whatever happens to it in the next couple of years. And I would think we need to kind of see a couple of years from now. I mean, it's very, we didn't think we'd be here 5 years ago, right? I don't think any of us did. And so let's let a couple of years go by, and I think we'll have a much better idea of what his tenure was like.
Yeah, because on one hand, you know, you give him credit for, even though some are rightfully criticizing the costs of these rights deals, they also retain them. So that's a win. On top of it, the company, from a stock standpoint, is in pretty good shape, even though they're going through cord cutting. They have done, as Mike alluded to, improved the product from a diverse standpoint. They're more outspoken with their anchors, being able to embrace the teams that they support, so they're a little more real on the air. But on the other hand, they've went through two different times now where they've laid off a significant number of people. They've lost some high-profile talent. And if they're economically not in the position to satisfy Mr. Iger and Disney down the road, then that too plays into this. And along those lines, guys, the play-by-play part of this is really fascinating in the next 2 to 3 years. You look at the NBA deal is over $2 billion. The NFL deal is clearly right on the border of $2 billion. The Major League Baseball deal is $700 million. If you guys were placing a bet in Las Vegas today on one of those rights deals being lost in the future, which one is it on? Brian, I'll start with you.
Gosh, that's a really interesting question. I mean, first of all, I would just think, when someone gets out of business with the NFL, let me know, right? When someone really has the guts to say, we're out of here. Not only because of Monday Night Football, which, as Mike said, has been a very mixed bag, but just that you can't have NFL highlights populating your air, right? We know that deal is about a lot more than just showing a football game on Monday night. You know, if I had to pick, I guess I'd pick baseball, because that seems to be the way the world is going. That seems to be the way ESPN is, contracting baseball tonight, as they did. I mean, the nice thing about baseball, though, to use a really terrible baseball analogy, is it's an innings eater, right? You can just put it on all the time. It's a big, long season, and it fills a lot of your air. But I guess if I had to pick, I'd pick baseball.
Mike, are you going the same direction?
Jason, I don't gamble, but if I did, I would absolutely go baseball. All you have to do is look at their shoulder programming. They have made huge bets on NFL and NBA. And look at the new shows that are popping up, The Jump, NBA-oriented. Everything seems built around the NFL and the NBA. Baseball is getting the short end of the stick, and it looks like Baseball Tonight and some of their other shoulder programs are on life support. So if I was to bet one way, I would say absolutely baseball.
Okay, so if they were to lose those rights, who becomes the most likely suitor? Obviously, you know, FS1 has, you know, been snatching up ESPN talent, but are they the network that strikes, you know, the big deal to land a play-by-play deal, or is there someone else that lurks in the waters? Mike, from your standpoint, who do you believe the biggest competitor would be to get those rights?
The automatic competitor to me is Fox, Fox and FS1, because they seem to be wanting to challenge ESPN across all fronts. But I'm starting to think that in the next 4 or 5 years, you know, we're going to see some of these tech companies that have billions of dollars to spend and want to get into sports actually start doing something instead of talking about it. So it wouldn't surprise me to see some of these companies start to compete with the traditional broadcast networks and the sports cable networks for sports rights for the very same reason that the sports cable networks want it, because it's guaranteed programming that people aren't going to turn away from. It's the last DVR-proof programming.
You look at the amount of revenue that the Facebooks, the Apples, the Googles of the world have accrued. I mean, last week, or I think it was 2 weeks ago, Netflix paid over $100 million to reunite the cast of Scarface. So clearly these companies have money. Brian, from your standpoint, who do you think that competitor is?
Paying the money they have.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think what the Scarface reunion of sports would be. Maybe the original cast of Sports Reporters. I don't know. I think, boy, that makes a lot of sense. You'd love to see what the actual number on that rights deal would be, you know, given the relatively low amount of money the NFL has kind of pumped out of some of these, its own experimentation. But it's funny about baseball, because we always talk about baseball, at least in the popular perception, being sort of on the way down or being sort of less popular, its audience getting a lot older. And, you know, but for a tech company to suddenly be in the game and to suddenly be in the big game with that kind of rights could be really interesting.
Amazon just paid 5 times more than Twitter did, right? In a span of 12 months, that deal went up 5 times. And down the road, if ESPN wants to reduce those costs, the NFL is going to want the same amount of money. They're going to get it from someone. The question is, does that digital deal now all of a sudden look like $100 million while ESPN's taking a $100 million haircut? But as you said, Brian, I mean, at some point, call me when the NFL is being told, here's your walking papers, you can leave our network, we don't need you, because that's a pretty bold statement and move to make if you're in the position of ESPN, which relies on way more than just that Monday night game. Mike, I want to touch on one thing that you wrote about this week on sportingnews.com, and it was regarding Mike Greenberg's new TV show, which is expected to be rolled out at the Upfronts presentation. Looking at where the network is heading with that show and the way that they're planning to structure it, how confident are you that they'll be able to move the needle on morning television with Greeny leading the charge?
I'm pretty confident. I think they have a lot of confidence in Greenberg. I think there's a lot of feeling up at ESPN that the Mike and Mike relationship had just run its course. You know, 17 years on the air, everybody gets tired after a while, you know, even Johnny and Ed. So let's try something new. And the way they're structuring it, you know, Greeny is going to be, you know, no question, the number one anchor. He's going to have a rotating series of guests. You know, look for an NFL person and a college football person like Booger McFarland to be next to an NBA person like Jalen Rose. And I think it's going to get a major promotional push starting with the upfronts on May 16th.
What about you, Brian? Are you confident a Mike Greenberg-led show can move the needle for ESPN?
I hate to prejudge anybody on anything because I sort of believe that we shouldn't sink, you know, a boat before it actually goes out to sea. I'm really interested in how this is going to play out. We don't know anything yet, but the kind of very skeletal descriptions we've heard so far sound to me a lot like the original iteration of Cold Pizza before it was made into a more watchable and bankable First Take. Right, you know, which where it sort of, you know, has a combination of pop culture things and interviews and guests and stuff like that. I absolutely with Mike, I'm sure we'll get a giant promotional push. I'm sure we'll be seeing Greeny all over everywhere and billboards and commercials and everything else. I just wonder, you know, when I watch those kind of morning shows, whether it's the NFL Network or the Golf Channel, I don't really know who those are for. Who is the person, who is the demographic that says, what I want is instead of Good Morning America or any of the traditional news shows or NPR or something like that, is an ESPN version of this that's kind of about sports, that doesn't have a lot of loud yelling, that's hosted by a nice, you know, facile broadcaster like Greenberg. I'm kind of wondering who that television show is for, and I don't really have a great idea in my head of who that would be.
Brian, from your standpoint, you know, you and I have had this conversation before about networks needing time to develop shows. As we're talking about Greenberg, you know, we'll all be looking at it in the first 30 days with a big bullseye on whether or not the show is a success. But the reality is it takes time for these things to mature. When you look at Fox Sports 1, they've now been operating for a while. They added Colin, they added Skip, they've added some high-profile talent on that network. How long of a leash do you feel they have with the Murdoch family before they're expected to make further inroads against ESPN?
I don't know the answer to that question, and that's a fascinating question that I think a lot of people within Fox broadly defined, kind of are very interested in, especially the non-FS1 part of Fox Sports. You know, I've heard a few people. I think one thing you can start to say is that Hurwitz is probably pretty much has the lineup that he wants, minus a couple of people. You know, maybe he wants to still do some slight tweaking or find another afternoon show. Maybe Katie Nolan winds up as part of that. But I think he's gotten pretty close to the vision he had. And then, of course, as you say, with games, they're going to add a bunch of Big Ten games this year. So this is probably getting pretty close to the FS1 that Horowitz wants. And now to your magic question, I don't know the answer to that. I'd love to know the answer to that, but I don't know. You know, so far they've been awfully patient, and we'll see.
Well, perfect timing, because I'm sure Mike does have the answer, right, Mike? You've got it. You're that fly on the Fox Sports 1 wall. How long of a leash do they have with the Murdoch family to get this thing to another level?
I think they have a pretty long leash, and I'll tell you why, because they started from nothing. You know, they could already claim in some ways that they're winning the PR war with ESPN. You know, I can tell you that these layoffs at ESPN were greeted with a sense of sadness and amazement, but also a little bit of happiness there. It was kind of like, hey, maybe we do have a shot at these guys. Maybe they are a wounded animal, and maybe we can put some pressure on them. So I think they feel like the wind is at their backs a little bit, especially with all the bad news coming out of ESPN. Don't forget, they've got a morning show coming up. I understand it's going to be Chris Carter and Nick Wright, so right. That's going to be going head-to-head against this new Greenberg show. And then, you know, the big question is, what do they do with Katie Nolan? I reported that ESPN, no less than John Skipper himself, has tried to woo her over there. So where Katie Nolan ends up could be a very, very big question.
If they get Nick and Chris on there, that's definitely going to help provide some boost to getting Skip some audience as a lead-in. So that's definitely welcome. And as you mentioned, Katie Nolan's a superior talent. So getting her on there on a 5-day-a-week run in a key time slot, I think, definitely helps them. I want to ask you, Mike, one question. I'm not sure that you'll have the answer to this, and Brian, you may not either, but I'm curious about it because, you know, just like Disney has relied on ESPN to be profitable for a long time, and it kind of erases some of the problems that they have throughout different parts of the company. The same could be said about Fox and the way Fox News has been that cash cow for the company for a long time. Given the current instability and the challenges that Fox News has dealt with, could that impact Fox Sports 1's ability to sink larger dollars into key talent and programming in the future? Mike, from your standpoint, anything you can add to that?
You know, I think they've already sank a lot of money into it. I think right now they're trying to say, all right, we planted the seeds, let's see if it grows. I mean, they took a huge risk on Skip, and Skip is still doing the kind of same old Skip does, LeBron, Cowboys, whatever. You know, I think he needs to change up his repertoire. I mean, I think the vehicle that could really grow is Speak for Yourself. Problem is, it's got a tough time slot. It's up against Around the Horn and PTI, and PTI is the gold standard.
What about from your standpoint, Brian?
I don't know if I have a direct point A to point B on that, but I would agree with Mike that I think the investments have been made. And now it's time to see whether the investments work or not. And it would add not only Skip, but obviously the Big Ten stuff, which was a big payday. I mean, the fact that you can find, I mean, I remember, what was it, three years ago, you could turn on FS1 on a Friday night and you could find a high school football game, literally. You know, kind of like ESPN was in its bargain basement days, right, where you'd find softball with some weird wrestling show on there, just because they were trying to find stuff to film. Now, you know, you could have a really nice quality Big Ten game. You could have that Michigan game that is perpetually on ESPN every Saturday at noon, and I could never get it off. Please put somebody other than Michigan. Suddenly that'll be, you know, an FS1 game, right?
I do miss that guy from Fiji pushing the rock in the strongman competition. I mean, come on, 2 o'clock in the morning, how great was that viewing?
Absolutely. But, you know, just to have that kind of stuff in the mix, like you said, the investment has been made, and now it's got to work. Now all these elements, you know, have to become something. By the way, I think it's ironic when we talk about the FS1 versus ESPN, you know, the kind of war of sniping that's gone on between them, is that, you know, Horowitz's thing was always that the highlight show was dead, that he wasn't going to invest in news, that he was going to invest in talk and debate. And ESPN always came back and said, you know, that's ridiculous. And we have, you know, well, after those ESPN cuts, they haven't gone all the way to the FS1 vision of the world, but they have lurched in that direction, I think it's fair to say. And that is one of the supreme ironies to me in all of this, is that, you know, after all that, now they are looking, and you're like, oh, here's all these branded personalities. Well, that's kind of what Horowitz has been saying at FS1 for a long time, and here we are.
The Six, Scott Van Pelt, and First Take moving to ESPN. Right there, you have all you need to know about whether or not ESPN took Fox Sports 1's strategy to heart.
I think in some ways, Jimmy Horowitz probably feels vindicated, you know? But at least he was being more honest and upfront about what was going on. ESPN, at the same time, is going to tell you and argue very, very strenuously that they're not moving away from news and information, you know, that they're bringing in Wojo and The Vertical, and they just re-signed Don Van Natta. So, I mean, they are still making a huge commitment to journalism, and I don't think they'll ever, ever admit Jamie Horowitz was right about anything.
I want to wrap on this. It's called Quick Hits, just the first thought that pops to your head to a couple of sports media-related questions, okay? Brian, I'm going to start with you, since you know this gentleman pretty well. Bill Simmons' next big sports media role will be blank.
Oh, my gosh. Well, first of all, I think I'd be hauled away in the police van if I admitted it. But I don't actually know the answer, so let's kick that speculation over to Mike.
Mike, you get a chance to bail him out. Bill Simmons' next big sports media role will be blank.
Regrouping. Hugely talented guy, a game changer. But right now, he has to reassess whether or not he wants to do TV again. I mean, I think Bill said it best in that interview with Chad Finn. He's like, is the TV show you want to do, and is the TV show you end up doing? So I think he's got some decisions he needs to make about whether TV is for him or not.
All right, Mike, I'm going to stay with you here. The one area you'd focus on immediately to restore viewer interest, confidence, and enjoyment of ESPN programming would be?
Balance. You know, we talked about politics. I'm all for, you know, people spreading their political views. I'm a free speech absolutist. But, you know, if they are going to get all this flack from conservatives and the alt-right about them having all these outspoken liberals on there, how about they throw a few conservatives on there, too, to balance out the programming?
Fair point. What about you, Brian? The one area you'd focus on to restore interest, confidence, and enjoyment of ESPN programming?
I think their central mystery, or at least, you know, big time, is just how do you make a sports studio show in 2017 that's compelling for people to watch? And that's, you know, something to me that extends from Van Pelt at night to Greenberg in the morning to the Six to everything, right? Is how can we make this work in 2017? Because we know we're going to have studio shows. It's going to be a huge part of our lineup. And if we don't want to have two people arguing with each other, what is the other thing we're going to have?
Brian, I'm staying with you on this one. When January 2018 rolls around, Mike Francesa will be working for blank.
If I had to absolutely guess, I'd say it's somewhere in the podcast world. I mean, I think that's just, to me, that would be where he would want to go or, you know, want to experiment with. I don't have that absolutely, but I think that is absolutely my hunch.
Mike, you're a New York guy. Where's Mike Francesa in January 2018?
He reunites with his old partner, Chris Mad Dog Russo, at Sirius XM Radio.
All right, and then the final one, Mike. If you were in John Skipper's shoes and could add three key people to revitalize the ESPN brands, who would be on your short list?
Connor Schell, number one. You know, he's the guy who really made ESPN Films into what it is. And let's not forget, among John Skipper's and Connor's successes are taking on successfully HBO in the documentary film business and actually winning an Oscar. So he would be number one. He's a huge player there. I think Scott Van Pelt is a model of you know, what they want their sports centers to be. And I think Jemele Hill, due to her versatility, she could do anything.
Brian, you get to close us out. If you're John Skipper and can add three key people to revitalize the ESPN brands, who are they?
You know, I don't know if I have three high-profile free agents that I want to add. I think it's sort of more of, you know, now looking at this new sort of slimmed-down company and sort of promoting and figuring out what to do with what people you have. You know, I love people like Pablo Torre and Mina Kimes who have been, you know, taking on a more prominent role at the network. I love watching them sort of figure out what they're going to do on television and writing and radio and everything else. And I'd sort of love to follow that train and as far as it goes and see what they wind up doing.
The narrative that's been written about the company over the last 2 years has kept us on the edge of our seats, and I don't expect it to slow down anytime soon. I want to thank you both for your time today, and we'll continue reading you on The Ringer, Brian, and for you, Mike, on The Sporting News. Thanks for the time.
You got it.
All right, anytime.
This is the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I did. You know, Brian and Mike raised a number of interesting points on ESPN. One part in particular stayed with me throughout the conversation. Mike said he thinks layoffs aren't over at ESPN and another one could take place this year. That's certainly not the type of news we're used to hearing mentioned in the same sentence with the worldwide leader in sports. Brian also raised a great point about Jamie Horowitz. He mentioned how Horowitz not only built FS1 around opinionated personalities, but he was initially rejected by ESPN officials for his assessment of highlight shows being on their last legs. When you look at last week's cuts and the way ESPN has adjusted SportsCenter and moved First Take from ESPN2 to ESPN, those moves indicate that Horowitz may have been onto something when he declared SportsCenter was wounded. How it all shakes out in the future will be very interesting. I look forward to keeping tabs on both networks. But that's going to bring this episode to a close. My thanks to Brian Curtis of The Ringer, Mike McCarthy of The Sporting News for their time. If you're listening to this episode on iTunes, please take a quick moment to subscribe and leave us a review. A reminder, I work with sports radio brands across the nation as a consultant. If your company or one of its brands need help, feel free to reach out. My contact information is available on sportsradiopd.com. In the words of Kid Rock, if it sounds good, you'll hear it. If it looks good, you'll see it. If it's marketed right, you'll buy it. But if it's real, you'll feel it. So be authentic in everything you do. Until next time, I'm Jason Barrett. Thanks for stopping by.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.